Evet, we're going to begin top of Nun Hey now. The Mishnah at the top of Nun Hey. So yesterday we talked about Yerek, what is within the category of Yerek. Today we're going to talk about Dagan. Shema says, Anodar min Dagan, Asur v'pula mitzri yavish, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Someone who restricts himself in Dagan is then also restricted in pula mitzri, right, some sort of gum that's dried out, that they used, they made into flour. That is the position of Rabbi Meir, because that is also something that is idgan, right? Idgan means that it's piled up and brought together in a creed. When you're talking about dagan, you're only talking about the five grain species. Someone who restricts himself in produce in osir al machamesh aminim. Then the word tvua means the five species. Whereas if he restricts himself in dagan, he's osir in everything. And what does it exclude? It excludes, right, fruits and vegetables. And so these are the five grain species. You have fruits and vegetables, and then you have items in between, which are also piled up like dagan, and they are also could be made dried out and made into flour. So the question of whether these are included under the term dagan or not is machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. So Mar says the memra. Right, it's so based on this that dagan called the midgan mashma.
Hold on one second. It seems that the sefer contradicts the Risha. Am I missing something?
Because
Rabbi Meir over there. Right, and presumably the whole sefer is Rabbi Meir.
Right,
and then he says, "No, the men are dug and also the chol, and upon tabs and then the dug also before a mitzri yavesh."
Right, I don't, not necessarily. I think that's an example, not necessarily. A disagreement.
Chamish is an example.
Right, an example of something that's considered idgan or dagan, even though it's not mechamish yedamine. And then Rabbi Meir is differentiating between the word tshuva and dagan. And so in the Sefer, explaining why Rabbi Meir's position is that dagan includes pula mitzri is because he thinks dagan means anything that is, nidgan or idgan, whereas tuwa means the five species. And so it's the reason for his position in the ratio. Okay, the member of the dagan comes from idgan mashma. So according to Rabbi Meir, means that dagan means anything that is piled up, right, brought together. Mashma means Rabbi Yosef, uke farutz hadavar. And when it spread out, Harbu b'nei Yisrael reshit dagan tirosh v'tzar b'chol tuat sadeh l'rov. So when this is the time of Hezekiah, when he reinstitutes or he reignites the fervor to take Tumas and Maestros, right, the people were not taking Tumas and Maestros, and then he goes ahead and he makes Tekanot to strengthen Tumas and Maestros, and it says he was successful. And he's successful, it says, with Parut HaDavar, Harbu B'nai Yisrael, when it spread out, and B'nai Yisrael brought lots of Reshit Dagan, Tirosh V'Yitzhar, which would be the items mentioned, right, in the Torah that you have to bring Tumas and Maestros from, right? Dagan, Tirosh V'Yitzhar. V'chol Tzvuat HaSadeh, or Chol Tzvuat HaSadeh, the robe, and all the produce of the field, plentiful. Masa Lakol. I called the robe. He took Maestro off everything. So now, Iyamart, the question is somewhat here between the Rishonim, but what we'll see basically is that if you take care of, there's an extraneous word, let's put it this way, an extraneous word or phrase in the pasuk we just read from the Navi, and based on that, it seems like the Dagan means a specific group of things, and that's going to be a problem for us. So we're going to see. Marts dagan kodemidgan mashma. Right, if you think dagan means kodemidgan, right, my kiparutz davar harbu or hirbu. Now when kifrutz davar hirbu, right, thank you. When it spread out, right, then they made plentiful. Mean that what were they doing? What does it mean that when it spread out, or when it was accepted, that they brought more? Right? If dagan, so this we'll read according to Rashi. According to Rashi, if the word dagan already means, according to Rabbi Meir, everything that is piled up, then what is, when it says, there it already said, we have the term used, Reshit Dagan. So then when it says Hirbu, that they brought even more, what is even more that they brought? They're already bringing everything, so how could they be bringing even more? So Rashi says, the Ran says that the problem is B'chol Tzvuat HaSadeh. If Reshit Dagan already includes everything that's in the field, then what is the additional term of B'chol Tzvuat HaSadeh? It's unnecessary. So either way, what you see is that the gun must be a narrower definition, and therefore when you say Hirbu Laro or Hebrew or Tzvuat HaSadeh, it's an addition to the gun. Right? So the gun must have a narrower definition. So that's a question on Rabbi Meir, who thinks that the gun has a very broad definition to include anything that is right mid gun. So Amar Abaye, why? What's the okay? Amar Abaye, Latuye Perut Ilan VeYerek. Right, so there you go. So that's, I think, Dali, maybe what you were hinting towards. That the fact is that there are other categories that aren't really mentioned here. We have Tiros Yitar, and then we have Dagan. Now, Dagan can either mean, you know, just the five species that comes there, or like the Rebbe Meir says, it means everything that is, you know, produce of the field that's piled up. But then you still have other categories which are not mentioned here, which are fruits and vegetables. So let it be that either Tzvuat HaSadeh or this Hirbu, right, includes Perot HaIlan B'Yerek. And therefore there is something in addition that was not mentioned in the first three phases, and that's what that's what the Pasuk is trying to identify or point out, that they also brought Trumot Maestrot on Perot HaIlan B'Yerek. Right, and to point out that in general, everyone agrees that Shrimat the Maestro of Yerek are only Midrabanan, right, that are only rabbinic in nature. He wrote Ha'ilan, most Rishonim believe it also only in Midrabanan. There are some that believe, I think there's a Rashi, it's not the Rashi here because he doesn't mention it, but there are Rashis that mention that Perot Ilan might be D'oraisa from the Torah, but Minat Torah, right, you only have Dagan Tirosh B'Yitzhar. Right. Not necessarily today, but when it was, right, that's also my focus with today, that has application, but when it was, Shusha Maestro's word D'oraisa, right, it only included Minat Torah was Dagan Tirosh V'Yitzhar. Right. Now, the Rebbe Meir no der Minat Tevuah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol modim no der Minat Tevuah, shein asur elo b'chamesh raminim. Everyone agrees, which is, right, obviously from our Mishnah, that if you just use the word Tevuah, that means the five species of grain. We have a brisa that suggests similarly that b'shavin b'nozer min atzvah shein usur el mehe aminim. Right, that if he uses the word tzvah, he's only referring to the five species. And my says pshita, right? So what? I mean, that's obvious. You read our Mishnah, right? You know that the Rebbe Meir says tzvah means five species. But why is this? What are you telling us here that we didn't know? So my says mal d'teima d'tzvah kol mili mashmam. I would have thought that tzvua means everything. K'mashmalan, d'lo mashma kol mili. That it doesn't mean everything. Alright? So now, where it says, Meiti Rav Yosef.
From the Mishnah, why would we think that tzvua is anything other than the chamesh aminim?
Right. I don't know. I think the question is more on the price, all right? When it's bush, you know, so I'm and then we have each bishavin. But no, when it's bush, you know, so
okay.
Right. I don't know I'm not sure, all right. We'll see in a second why. It's, why there's a possibility to think otherwise. Right? Mm-hmm. The point is that you could have read the mission like this. Rabbi Meir Omer, Anodir Min HaTevuah, Eino Asur Ela Mechamesh Aminim. And that's only Rabbi Meir's position. Chachamim disagree. Right, the Chachamim say Dagan means five species, but Tevuah maybe means produce, means a larger grouping other than just Chamesh Aminim. So even though Rabbi Meir is the author of the statement in the Mishnah, the Brice is going to tell us that even the Chachamim agreed to that position. But you would have thought it's obvious, right? Because Dagan, the Chachamim say, is five species. And Rabbi Meir says it's everything. It's what, certainly where Rabbi Meir says it's five species, Chachamim agree. So that's exactly what the Brice is telling us. The Brice is telling us that the Chachamim agrees to that position of Rabbi Meir.
No, but what's the Pshita then?
That's the Pshita is, of course, everybody agrees, and the Gemara says, no, well, I would have thought that Tevuah could have meant something more expansive.
Or maybe just the fact that the statement is made, not for any longer reason I use the word, but just the fact that the mission says it in the name of W. Mayer, you might think that means, you know...
That the Chachamim hold otherwise,
right?
Okay,
pretty much that everybody's on the same page here. Okay, Meitiv Rav Yosef, what's the davar here, Rav Ben Yisrael? Harbu Ben Yisrael? Amar Rava, Tvua Lachud, Tvuat Hasadeh Lachud. Right, so in that pasuk, alright, what do we see? That pasuk has the term kifrosa davar, and then it had in that pasuk tagan, and it has tvuat hasadeh. So he would suggest that that the word tvuat could be more expansive, and that's what Rabbi Yosef is asking here. Then you have the word tvuat could mean something greater than just simply the chamishin medium. Otherwise, if it just means chamishin medium, why does it say tagan? And then tvuat ha-sadeh. You're repeating the same term according to the Chachamim. If you believe the word tvuat means five species, and you heard the word tagan means five species, then the pasuk said tagan, and it said tvuat ha-sadeh. So why do you need both of those? So the answer of the Gemara is tvuat ha-tvuat lachud and tvuat ha-sadeh lachud. I mean, that tvuat ha-sadeh is a noun phrase. It's not the word tvuat. It's tvuat ha-sadeh. Tvuat ha-sadeh, maybe the Chachamim agree, or everybody would agree, that tvuat ha-sadeh is a much more expansive usage or description.
It's separate.
Right. A description, but it's not tvuat. Tvuat, the word, if you had just written tvuat, maybe that means that's synonymous with dagan. Right?
Did you just say tvuat alone?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to say. There are the words of what can stand alone. Just their point is that in this pasuk, which is talking about Trumos and Maestros, that the fact that the words, you can't prove anything from this pasuk about the words of what, because this pasuk's usage is of Atas Adet, right? So it's a noun, you have a noun phrase, and you can't just separate out and say, oh, that means what to say, and to are synonymous. That's what they want to say. Alright. So it says, okay, made to Rabbi for the Devar, Harbu Ben Yisrael, Amarav, it's for the Chud, for the Zilachud. Bar Mar Shmuel, Pakid, the Litlun Tlaisar Alpe Zuze the Rabba. Alright, so he was, I guess he was passing away, and his last words, he gives over to Rabba 13,000 zuz, but he can only take it min alauta dinar panya, from the alauta, loosely translated as produce. Okay, loosely translated. That Gemara's going to have to discuss dinar panya, from his produce that was found in dinar panya. So this gentleman left right to Rava a gift of 13,000 zuz, but he was only entitled to draw that gift down from the produce found in Nahar Panya. So now the question is, what does the word alauta mean? If he's entitled to draw, or what's collateral for his gift, is this alauta. What is alauta? So that's what we have to discuss. So, Shalfa Rava the Kamei Rav Yosef. Rava sent it to Rav Yosef, alauta hefe mikarya. What does alauta mean? So, alauta, which is interesting, first of all, he sent it to, aside from that, that Rav Yosef was there at that time, but Rav Yosef is a Bucky in Targum. Right? Why is Rav Yosef a Bucky in Targum? Because right? Rav Yosef had gotten sick, right, at one point, right? And he was forgotten because he wasn't able to see, right? And so he was learning Torah Shabbat Peh, and their day when you learned Torah Shabbat Chtav, he had to learn it Minat Chtav, right? He had to be able to see it, and when he learned Torah Shabbat Peh, it was Baal Peh. So Rav Yosef was unable to see, right, he learned, or became a Bucky in Targum, because that's how he learned Torah Shabbat, that was through the Targum. Well, nobody mentions it here, I thought it was interesting that maybe that's why he sent it to Rav Yosef, to find out what Alauta meant, but we'll see in a minute that he wasn't unsure about it, but that maybe that's why he sent it to Rav Yosef. The word Alauta, tell me what the word Alauta means. So then, Amar Rav Yosef Matnissan, it's a Mishnah, right, or it's a Braisa. Everybody agrees that when we're talking about the word tvua, right, then you only usher in the five species. So that the word alauta is the targum for tvua. So since alauta is the targum for tvua, the word alauta is only going to mean five species. So that's basically what Rav Yosef sends back to him. You want to know what the definition of the word alatu means? It's tvua, tvua, and we have a mission that says tvua means five species.
Not going to be reverse of what we said before. The reason for having the tvua might mean more is that the Targum translates it as alata, and alata could be a more
expressive term, which we're going to see in a second. That's exactly what Rava's going to interpret it as, more expensive term. Exactly. Right, so that was the in the Gemara before, when Rabbi Yosef challenged on the pasuk, why would he have thought tvua was a more expensive word? Is because tvua is translated as alalta. Alalta means anything good or positive. That's what it seems, a more expensive word, and therefore you would have thought more. And then we said no, that meant tvua. There you're discussing tvua. I said not right necessarily tvua. So now Rav Yosef says tvua means just the five species. Amalei bai midomin. Tvua lo mashma lemechameshet aminim. That's not true. Tvua means, or uniquely means five species. Alalta komili mashma. Right? Alalta means everything. It's a much more inclusive term. Alalta versus tvua. Even though tvua can be translated as alalta, that doesn't mean that alalta can be translated as tvua. Right? So adrua the kamei derava. So they returned this, or they replied to Rava. Amar halbo kambi boilet. That wasn't my question. The alalta komile mashma. So there you go. So there he says, I don't have any question about this, that alalta was a very expansive, inclusive term. Right? Hadahu di boilet. This was my question. Skar batim uskar spinot. What about the rent from house rents and boat rents? Right, my me and Rina came into Pachtan Lavalautahi. So since they depreciate, they are not considered alauta. And again, the word alauta here seems to me, I'll read you just the definition that Rashi gives. Alauta mashu komilesha oga umishabeah. Anything that moves up, grows, and gets better. Right? Rafilu Mishar Peyroch Mishab Kumtiva Lagabokan, right? So that means it seems like anything that grows, right, that gets better with growth and time. Right. So anything that grows and improves with growth, right, that would be included. So now his question is, what do you do with rents? So rents are, you know, they are positive, they grow, but there's an underlying problem with rents, is that the asset that's generating the rent is also depreciating at the same time. So is the rent really, in some sense, a compensation for the depreciation, right? Or is the rent, right, something that's independent of the depreciation, right? So that's your, all right, so we'll see here now. So there he says, the Gemara says, do you say that since they depreciate, it's not considered alalta, right? It's not considered improvement and growing. Well, Dilma came into the Yadiyah Pachtayu alaltahi. Or maybe because the depreciation isn't either one obvious, or number two, it's not necessarily in concert with the rent, meaning that it might be independent of the rent. You might depreciate at a different rate than the rent is being collected on it, therefore it's considered good. So, Amru Rabbana and Kamehda Rav Yosef.
In HP 12C, you would know it. I mean, it can't mean that you don't know the depreciation rate. It's not that you don't know the depreciation rate, it's just that it's not.
No, but that's a financial depreciation rate. Is that the physical depreciation rate? I mean, we have accounting ways to depreciate. That doesn't necessarily seem that it reflects the real depreciation. I mean, people depreciate items and they're still around when they're fully depreciated, right? So, that means that obviously it was, quote unquote, incorrect, but that we made assumptions that are not necessarily the real depreciation rate. Okay, Amar Rabbanan Kamei de Rav Yosef. So the Rabbanan told Rav Yosef what Rava had said. Amar Bechima Akar de Lo Tzarech Lan. If he doesn't need me, if he knew what the word meant, Amar Sholech Lan. So why is he coming to ask me about Alauta if he knows what Alauta means? And he has some other question. So Ikbid Rav Yosef was very upset about the situation with Rava. Now, again, the way I explained it above, that if you say that Rav Yosef was an expert in Alauta, right, in Aramaic, right, or in Targum, then it makes sense that he sent him for the word to, he thinks Rav Yosef simply thinks to get the definition of the word Alauta in Targum, and then he gives it to him, and then Rava writes, they send back, Rava says, I didn't need that, I wanted to know whether these I didn't include it in halal. So, you know, maybe Rabbi Yossi says, oh, that's not, you know, but that's not in my purview. I mean, that my expertise is in this targum. That's what I thought he sent me. And now he's trying to ask, he's really asking me about something else. Right? Or, again, that the point is that he didn't, he should have defined what he was asking, not asking me, you know, he wasn't clear about what he was asking for. And then when he comes back and says, I know that already. And that's not a nice way to ask, right, if he wanted an answer, especially since Rabbi Yossi gave the wrong definition.
I mean, it's really not. This, maybe it's not like he really did not know when he asked. He didn't know it was Torah. He was embarrassed. He sort of said, "I knew that. I have a different question." He said, "You know,
uh-huh.
Uh-huh. The name you sort of, you know, covers up." He's saying, "Yeah, you didn't know that. You know,
I admit that you don't know."
You know, so
okay.
No, except that just before,
he had some sense of.
He didn't understand what it meant.
Right, he had some sense of what it meant. But I will. It's possible. You'll see that the following Gemara that Rabbi Yosef was upset at Rava, and he was upset that he was a Baal Gaib. That's what it seems to be. That the way that we should read the criticism or the Musa that he gives him is that he was a Baal Gaib, and so that he should be more less of a Baal Gaib. So either way, it could be. I think you could read it your way, which is that when he said, "Oh, okay, I knew that."
Yeah.
Right? That's also a form of right Gaib. That person can't admit that he didn't know it.
Mm.
And so I think you have the possibility of reading the Gemara that way. I didn't read it that way, but I don't think it's. I think it's a possibility that you could read it. Right? All right. So Ikbet Rav Yosef Shama Rava. So Rava heard that Rav Yosef had been upset. So what do you do when someone's upset? Right. So Atal Kamei B'Mala Yom De Kippuri. He went to see him on Erev Yom Kippur. Right. To ask for a slicha and mechila. So Ashkech Mishamei D'Avakol Mosin Kamei Kasa D'Chamro. He found that his servant was, you know, making wine for him. Which is just interesting in general, right? He's Erev Yom Kippur, and he's, you know, there's a mitzvah to be marvi b'suda. He's also, you know, he's drinking wine, and it was, I guess, very common. They were probably it was much more common that they drank wine in their day, but, you know, I can imagine taking down a bunch of alcohol right before Yom Kippur. But, here he is in Erev Yom Kippur, and he's drinking wine. So his, servants pouring the wine, but mazig, right, means to dilute, right? To dilute the wine. Their wine was, you know, unlike ours, which comes bottled and prepared and already, you know, diluted in a sense, watered. Wine concentrate. It was they came in the petal bottles and they diluted the wine. So his servant was about to dilute it. So then he jumps in. Rova jumps in. So he says, Amarlei, Havli, the Amzigle. Right, so he says, let me do it for him. Let Rova do it. And Rova was unique. Where Amsachim says that. Maziga, that Rava had a specific type of maziga, called maziga, any maziga that's kind of like the maziga of Rava is not a good maziga. So what is that? Rava had a unique maziga, which is that it was three parts water, one part wine. That's his, that was his dilution, right? So that was his unique. Right, he had that patented. So nobody else could use 75%. So hopefully the Amzik late. Army Habale become Mosik. He will cast the Khama. Right, so he did it. He kashrat the Amr Hadim Mizga Dami the Mizga the Rabba. This is Rabba's dilution. Right, so that's the Rabba the Braid of Rabbi Yosef Bakama. This is the Mziga that's unique to Rabba Braid of Rabbi Yosef Bakama. Again, so this was when Rabba had this unique Mziga, and Rabbi Yosef, he had learned by Rabbi Yosef in the past. Rabbi Yosef in the past had tasted it, and here he comes back and he says, wow, this reminds me of of Rabba's old dilution methods. Right, so Amarlei Kunihu. So he says, Rabba says to him, I'm here, you know, you got it right, you guessed right. So Amarlei Lo Tinte Makarech Adamartli Perushitan Milsa. Says, don't sit down, right, or don't get down on your knee, on your legs or on your knees till you explain me this pasuk. Maidichtiv, what does it say in the pasuk? What does that mean when it comes to the Shira by the Be'er? Right? The Be'er will find the Be'er late in the 40th year, they find a Be'er, and they complain of the water, they find a Be'er, and then they sing a Shira as a Shira. At the end of the Shira, it says, So what does that mean? So I'm like, Kimishro said that with that smoke in midbar, when a person makes himself like a midbar, like a desert, who move karla kol, that is open right to everyone. Then Torah nitna lo b'matana. Then he gets Torah, it is a gift. Shneamar u midbar matana. from the midbar, right? One who is in the midbar gets the matana. One who is the midbar gets the matana. The kevin shenitna lo b'matana. Once he receives the gift, nachalo kel. Then his inheritance is Hashem. Shnemar b'matana nachliel. Right? So kevan shenachlo kel. Then once he reaches, once he's inherited that which belongs to Hashem, olel gdula. Shnemar u'minachliel b'mot. Right, the one who has the nachla of kel is goes to b'mot, right, the high places. V'imhik bi'atzmo, but then if a person, when he reaches these heights, he also brings himself up, meaning that he makes himself haughty. Hakadosh Baruch Hu mashvilo, Hashem pushes him back down. Shenemar says, umi b'mot hagai. Right, from the b'mot, he goes to the gai, right, the valleys. So from the heights, he'll be down to the valleys if he, again, I mean, he'd be out, he lifts himself up. So that he'll be pushed back down. Lo, that was shoki no tovakak. Not enough that he goes down to the valleys, but they, right, implant him, alright, in the ground. Shnemar nishkefal pnei shimon. Alright, so that's the, again, that part, that's interesting, because that pasuk is not part of, it's a different pasuk totally, right? It's not part of the, it's not necessarily, I'm sorry, no, that is part of it. I said, but this company, Shemoy, gets better be chosen, but Kaddish Baruch Hu, and Biel. If he does Kazar, then Hashem lifts it up. Shemar Koga, Toga, Koga, Yinase. Right, that all those in the valley will be uplifted, or those in the depths will be uplifted. So that's from Yishayo. So that's not part of the puzzle, but the Gemara sees it as a continuation of this sequence. So that we see that people who are in the valleys can be, or those in the depths can be uplifted. So the pasuk he interprets to be referring to Limud HaTorah, that one has to open himself up to understanding, learning from everyone, right, and treat everyone, you know, in an equal way. Meaning that one has to, the way that we show and read it here, one has to be, I don't know, I would have read this differently, so, but you know what, I'm not a Rishon, but I would have read it differently. But all the Rishon read like this. Rashi reads, Kamid Barshu Mufkalakol Malamei Torah B'chinam Lakol. He has to teach Torah to everyone in a manner that is healthcare free. He has to give, you know, I mean, he has to teach without being compensated. The way the Rosh learns it is just Lama Torah Tolakol. He has to just teach everyone. Not about free, but just has to teach everyone. And Sam Tosis interprets it that way. I don't know if I would have, again, far be it for me to say this, but I don't know if I would have interpreted it as being required to teach here, but rather the characteristic that we have that by Torah, one who makes himself from Midbar, meaning makes himself low, right? Midbar is not considered something of value, it's not considered something, people don't take possession in a Midbar because it's not valuable. Right, it's not something that people need. So when a person makes himself like a midbar, right, he doesn't consider himself to be above doing something, above learning from everyone. Right, so I don't know if I would have said a teaching, I would have said it about the person's midos, that he doesn't see himself as above anyone else, he doesn't see himself above anyone to learn from them. So that's the statement, and it was a hint to Rava to be a shapel ruach. Right, whereas, and that would make sense to me that then that relates to the later half of the pasuk. Which is, right, that imhik bio, if he makes himself haughty, right, again, you can learn, the way the other Rishon learned is imhik bio, if he raises himself up, means that he feels that he's above others to teach them, right, then Hashem pushes him back down. I would have said it has to do with the core character of the individual, that imhik bio, if he's now got the Torah and he feels above others, right, where he's no longer, right, he doesn't feel like he can still learn from others and that he can still interact with others. That's a character trait, right, then, Hashem pushes him, puts him back down, meaning that he teaches him a lesson.
What is Rashi get? Midbar,
that's interesting. I did not think of that. I mean, Rashi doesn't say that, but he does it in Lamed Torah B'chinam Lakol. So maybe that's what people saying that Rashi is interpreting midbar to mean midaber, to speak.
Well, it's sort of pleasant here, I think. That just like a midbar is open to all.
Right. You know, that's why I would have read the simple interpretation as midbar, because that's what the word is. But you could, I guess, I don't know if somebody interprets that Rashi's using the. That midbar, because that's what he's doing, he's teaching, so the midbar could be. Right. Midbar is midbar, could be. Although I read it as midbar, shumufkar lakol, which sounds much more, not like midbar, shumufkar lakol, which is much harder to read. Someone who is always talking is Muskar Lakol. I don't know if I would have read it that way necessarily, although you could have interpreted that the play on the word is from Midbar to Midaber. Right. Okay. So either way, so here this Rabbi Yosef is giving a hint to Rava that maybe he should tone down his I know it. Or I knew it already, or I didn't need to ask you about this question. Right, and again, if someone does this and makes himself, there is a way to rectify it, and that is that there is a tshuva. That person has the ability to bring themselves back up once Hashem has put them down.
This approach may by meaning that open to all something certainly like the egotism in yeshiva is that let's say many yeshivas, let's say many yeshivas are always only interested in the best guys. And as opposed to saying, you know, our responsibility is to teach Torah to everybody, you know, we don't want to be known as the place with the best guys, and so that may be a failure of their mission. And there is a certain amount of arrogance in that, I think.
Right, so that's the Gemara in Brachos.
Yeah, but in Dachliya Bamot, if they end up having the right attitude, then eventually they'll have only the best guys.
And whoever they take will be elevated to be the best guys.
So that's my focus, Gemara in Brachos. That was what the Gemara in Brachos, Gemara in Rosh Hashanah talks about Rabbi Gamliel. And there where he says that only Kol Shelibo, Hev Libo Shavim, can come into the base Medrash. Right? And when they were mocking him from the Nesius, right? When he was Ikput and they removed him from the Nesius, and they made Elo Zor ben Azariah, the Rosh Hashiva, it says over there, Tosfu Safsalim the base Medrash. They added benches in the base medrash that day because they let everybody in. They took away the guards from the doors of the base medrash and they let everyone in. And so there are many that point out there in the Gemara that it says that they were hitosu safsalim. They added benches, but it does not say hitosu talmidim. Right? Because right, those that were entered weren't necessarily right. I mean, in some senses, he was right about the quality of those that he entered into the base medrash. But there was that exact focus in the Gemara in Brachos.
Right. So we're living in high schools, so my boys went to Sasha, we spoke to Rabbi Yami Kamenetsky and asked what his master was like, what his standards were like, you know, who the boys that he's going to be like. And he said, I was very impressed. He said, we follow very much my father's, you know, Yaakov Nerzi, she said that the responsibility for Chinuch above all Israel was, you know, shared by the community. And I was like, he didn't try to put a different face on it. He said, look, we have an obligation. So, of course, you know, we try to bring it to the standard that we can, but there's a responsibility that we have to make sure everyone learns Torah.
Right, very good. All right, Tanya. I have a price. Another minute of Ganasar, Apapula Mitriya Vesh, Umutar Balak, Umutar Ba'orez, Bechilko Batargis, Batisni. Someone takes a letter from the Gan, it's also in Pula Mitriya Vesh, dry Pula Mitri. So who's this? This is Rabbi Meir, but is Mutar Balak. Right, you can, if it's moist, then since moist is not made into flour, that's excluded. And it's also Mutar in Orez, rice.
Isn't that a name?
I'm sorry?
Right.
But he says, right. But Meir says it's more inclusive than Dagan. Right. Meir says when you say no Dimina Dagan, you include Pula Mitzri. That's what the price is saying here. Also, Pula Mitzri Yavesh. The dry Pula Mitzri. It's mentioned twice there, the word Pula Mitzri, right? Alright, so that's Umutar Ba'orez and Rice, Bechilka, Betargis, Betisni. Again, this shows up in other places in Shas. I don't know enough about this, but the Chilka, these are different types of wheat that are divided up. The kernels are broken into two, three, or four. Again, I don't know I don't have a good feeling about this. I don't know if this is before they roast them, before they, you know, grind them down. Again, I don't have enough insight into it, but that's what this Chilkal, Targis, and Tisni are. And they would not be included in the under the term Dagan. And I don't know if that's because it's not ground into flour. I'm not sure what the issue is, but they obviously knew this was something common in their day, splitting into two, three, and four pieces.
They say split kernels were not stored in piles.
Okay.
So they split them before they were there.
Right. I don't know. I'm not sure what the point. I don't know if that was just they were split or they split them. What was the purpose of splitting them? I didn't have a lot of insight here. All right. Another min ha-perot. Another min ha-perot ha-shana. Asur ha-perot ha-perot ha-shana. U-mutar ha-bigdim u-b-tla'im u-b-chalav u-b-beitzim u-b-gozlot. Someone who takes a neder from all fruits of this year, right, then he's usur in all the fruits of that year, but he is still mutar in, right, the yim, the goats, and the tla'im, the chalav, the milk, the beitzim, the eggs, and it goes lot. Right, so all the young chicks. So when we say perot hashana, we interpret it to mean literally, right, perot, meaning not, you could add a broader term of perot, right? We see, peru or vu. We use the term perot to also mean offspring, right, or derivative. So we, right, a derivative product. So we're not saying that here perot means any derivative, right? It means literally, perot in the sense of produce. Right, that it means fruits, vegetables, anything that's been out in the fields. So it's exclusive sense. Whereas if someone says, he might giduleshen alai, right, if he says anything that is grown in this year, or anything, then asur b'kulan. Then he's even asur at all those items above, because these are things that grow in this year. Okay? Another min ha-perot, min perot ha-aretz, asur b'chol perot aretz. Someone takes a nether from all fruits of the land, he's also an all preserved, mutar b'kmeimu pitriot. Smother and mushrooms and fungi. V'im amar gidulei karka alai asur b'kulam. If he says anything that grows from the ground, then he's asur in all of these. Right. So why is perot ha'aretz does not include mushrooms and fungi, whereas gidulei karka does include them? So Gemara challenges that. Raminhi, this is a walk on myself. Davar shein gidulam in aretz amir shakol niyebi v'ro. If it doesn't grow from the land or from the ground, the bracha is shakol niyebi v'ro. Guess what doesn't grow from the ground? Netanya, ala melech, salt, ala zamit, right? Salt, that seems to be like a high concentration of salt water. Balkmeim u'pitriot, fungi and mushrooms. Omer shakol niyebi v'ro. That's the bracha we make, right? We make bracha on mushrooms from shakol niyebi v'ro. Why? Why do we make a bracha on? It's in gidulo min haaretz. It doesn't grow from the land. So how could you suggest if a person takes a neder of gidulei karka, right, that would include kameim and pitriot? Whereas for a bracha, right, you say it's not gidulei karka. So Amar Rabaye, well, that depends. Mirbu rabu meara. You're right. They grow on the ground. About minak meabira yankei below meara. But when it comes to sustenance or nutrition or their growth that is brought there, where do they draw their nutrients from? That is from the air and not from the ground. So if you talk about gidulei karka from a term that a person would use, anything that goes on the ground, that would include mushrooms because they do grow on the ground. If you're talking about a bracha, right, then we would not include them because, well, even though they grow on the ground, they do not derive their nourishment, right, from the ground. So what it means they don't draw the nourishment from the ground is, one possibility is that they don't draw the ikar. That most of their nourishment is not drawn from the ground. That's the way the Ran interprets it. Others say that they don't place roots. Right, so that's why we say they don't draw their nourishment from the ground because they don't have roots. So even though maybe they do draw their nourishment from what they're placed on, because they don't root from the ground, then they're not considered to do the karka. But either way, right, you see that the bracha is shakol, because they're not considered to do the karka, but yeah, they'd be included in the net. The problem is, b'ha'tani al-davarsh in gidulo min aretz. The problem is that the braisa there, or the mishnah, the by brachos, when it talks about brachos, it clearly defines that why are they brachos shakol? Because it's not gidulo min aretz. So they're using the exact term that we are using in the Nedarim. So they're saying, it's not called gidulo min aretz. So it's not called gidulo min aretz, then why in a nether will it be called gidulei karka? Why would it be considered? So Mar says, well, tani al-davarsh in yonik min aretz. Change the term. It's not gidulom and aris, but really yinika, which is the determining factor is yinika. So gidulei karka doesn't literally mean it grows on the ground. It means something that is nourished from the ground. So the interpretation of the word gidulei would be yonek. Supposed to be in a nether, when a person takes a nether, when he means gidulei karka, he doesn't mean that which nourishes from the ground. He means anything that's found on the ground. Okay, next mission. Another minak suit. Someone restricts himself in clothing. Right? Mutar v'sak u'biriyah v'chamila. Right, then he is mutar in a sack, right? A sackcloth, yiriyah, some sort of curtain, and a chamila is a thick blanket of made out of coarse types of fiber. So, because those aren't generally considered clothing. So when it says clothing, he means, you know, things that people normally wear for clothing. So since a sack, a yiriyah, and a chamila are not the normal clothing, therefore those were not included in his nether. Amar konim tzemer ole alai. He says that I restrict having wool on me. Mutar lehit kasod b'tzei tzemer. So when he says that, he means, what does he mean by tzemer? He means wool clothing. Doesn't mean the wool itself, right? Pieces of wool, right? That's not what he means. So, and if he says konim pishtan ole alai, and he says that same thing about flax, meaning linen, right? Then he's mutar lekhtasos benise pishtan. Then he doesn't mean, right, the raw, I don't know, linen, the uncombed linen or uncombed flax. He means the linen, the product of clothing that's made by linen. So therefore, you'd be mutar in those items. Now, Rav Yehuda Omer, Akolufi. So this was, who's asking? Akadayi was asking us yesterday. I saw this when I was preparing the daf. I said, this is exactly what we were talking about yesterday. That Rav Yehuda Omer, Akolufi, I know there, right? It all has to do with the context, the person and the context. Right, and that's what we discussed yesterday, the possibility that the nether, you have to look at the nether within the context of which it's said. And that's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda says here. Tan Beizia, he's carrying a bundle of wool, and he's sweating, and he says, and it's Vayer Yechel Kashin, it smells horrible. Amar Konim Tzemer Upishtina Lo Elai. Says, I won't ever get any benefit from wool and linen. Right? What is he referring to? Right? In that context, what's bothering him? The wool that he's carrying. Does he intend not to wear a woolen clothing? No. His intention is that he doesn't want to be involved in this type of labor anymore, which is carrying around big bundles of smelly wool. Right? So then he says, when he takes the nether, it refers to the raw wool, and not to the clothing that is made out of wool. Mutar litkasot, ba'osar lafshil acharav. He's mutar to wear the clothing, but he is not mutar to carry it anymore, right? He can't carry around wool, but he can wear wool. Tanya, remember Bryson, those are minhak suot, someone who restricts the suot, mutar b'sak, ubiriya, ubakamila. So that's our Mishnah. Ve'asur, but he's still asur. Alright, now he's asur of a punda. Punda was some sort of belt, and they're a hollow belt, which they use also as, it's almost like a money belt that they used to use. Ubif hiskiya.
So you need to take that off before you dive in.
A patna.
It's in Gemara Shabbos. Mentions it also. Gemara Shabbos mentioned a number of places in Shabbos. You see the word pando comes up. This money belt, if he wears it in the shops, he wears it upside down versus he wears it right side up, right, with the mouth facing up, facing down, whether he'll carry it, right, or not carry it, whether it's considered begging. Okay, piskiya, a band. This is some sort of band or girdle. Ubisikortia is a leather coat. Ubikat valia, which is a leather spread. Upalia is some sort of shoes, like socks, felt shoes, socks. Uplinaya are some sort of knee breeches. Alright. Umechnasayim, right, pants or shorts, vikoba, and a hat. And so these items would be, he'd be restricted in these items, meaning that these are all considered or subsumed in the category of sus, as opposed to sak, yiriya, and chamila. So my iskorti, what is this iskorti, which I told you is a leather coat? I'm a rabba barachana, kituna de tzala. Alright, again, leather coat. Alright, so it's a ketonet. Kituna is a ketonet, the tzala made out of leather. Tanya, yotzin. So where does yotzin here? Rashi actually puts in the word. Rashi puts in the word Shabbos. But the other reason I point out, that's what it's referring to, this braisa. Right, it's a tosefta from Shabbos. Yotzin b'Shabbos. You can go out on Shabbos, b'sak, ava, u'b'sagus. Ava ubiriya v'chamila mipnei gshamim. Person can wear.
Considered clothes.
Very good. So there you see what these items are considered clothing, because if you wear it on Shabbos, it's not considered hotzah. It's not considered carrying. Means that you're wearing it, because what you're allowed to do on Shabbos is wear clothing. You're not allowed to carry it. If it's not considered clothing, then it's considered carrying, because you're not wearing it. You're carrying it. So what are the items that you can use? You can use a sack ava, right? A thick bag, usagus ava, which is again some sort of coarse woolen blanket, a thick coarse woolen blanket. Ubiriya, we said before, right? So it's a regular, like some sort of curtain blanket. Ubichamila, mipnei gshamim, because of the rain. Of a low, what you cannot wear is a teba, kupa, or machatzelet. Mipnei gshamim, and you can't use some sort of chest. I don't know, some sort of small wooden chest item to put on your head, and not a basket, and not a machatel, it's a mat. I mean, these aren't items that are worn. These are, you're definitely clearly using them for carrying them to protect yourself from the rain, and not wearing them to protect yourself from the rain. So, ha-ro'im yotzim b'sakim, ve'lo ro'im bilvad. The ro'im go out with, why is it that sakim are considered clothing? Because the ro'im go out b'sakim. So below ro'im bilvad, not only do shepherds go out in sackcloth, amru kol adam, so tibra ha-chamim b'hofet. Anybody can, and everybody does wear it, but it's just that who is the normal person to walk around with a sack-like clothing? That was the Roeh, and that's where the thumb says.
That's a question. Isn't this a question in our Mishnah? It's mashma that a sack.
Right.
It's not a clothing in our Mishnah, mashma that it is a clothing.
Right. That is
right. That is a question. The Mishnah is a side point, not...
Right. I think either you take it as it's sakava. Right, which is my differentiate between sakaba and sak. Right, I think that's what. In the end, you're gonna have to say that's the differentiation here, because the Gemara never, either the Gemara leaves it as a problem, right?
Only is the difference of lashon and neder. We say clothes and clothes.
Right.
For Shabbos, and the kol mila is considered, you know.
And that's hard because lashon and neder should impact on Shabbos. I mean, Shabbos, we're not talking about a Torah prescription. We're talking about something that's carried.
You can say that, lashon and neder means typically people, say the clothing is not typical clothing. But on the other hand, if somebody is wearing them,
it's clothing. It's clothing for Shabbos. Once it's clothing for raining, then it's clothing for...
Enough for Shabbos, but not...
If somebody wears a briefcase on their head, no one's going to say that that's an article of clothing, because it's not. But these things, they're not commonly worn, but they are worn in some cases enough to be considered clothing.
Right. So, Rabbi Yehuda Mishnah, going back to what's that like if someone says really says Tamer? It always has to do with the.
Here, so we're going to say Rabbi Yehuda right now. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, pull if you don't know there, I'll think the context. So, Tanya Kate, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, pull if you don't know there. Are you Lavush Tamer? Hi, Beitzar. He's wearing wool, it's itchy. Right? That's a red experience. But I'm going to go to Tamer Olay Lai, then he takes a net from Tamer, also a little post from Mutsu Luton. Then he's referring clearly to not wearing wool anymore because that's what's bothering him, but he's allowed to carry wool because that's not what the context. I have towing Pishtan, right? If he's carrying Pishtan, he's here, and the same would be true of Tamer. He's carrying long, and then he says, going to Pishtan Olay Lai because of the smell or the burden. Mutsu Luton post, you can wear it, also Luton, and then you can't carry it. So that's it, exactly. Everything in the context means that what you have to look at what's bothering him, that is forcing, why is he taking the nether? If he's taking the nether because of what's going on in the context that he's in.
How could you Tanakam would argue that? It almost looks like Rabbi is explaining.
The Ron says that Rabbi is.
It would be hard to explain if I say it's nether, no Pishtan. I'm wearing leather, and I'm carrying some heavy smelling Pishtan. Someone tell you he's not going to wear leather, Pishtan
right.
Clothes.
And he says that if you look, the Ran says what you're saying. He says the Tanit of Masminsan Spirulay to Rabbi Huda Modala Tanakama. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Huda agrees with Tanakama, hey, for the Lekho Chacha, whenever there's no clear definition of what the net is about, the Visha Mashma Vlotina. Definition of the word, whenever you say Tzemer, the basic word means clothing and not carrying Tzemer. So if you use the word in out of context.
And so I think that's what Rabbanu would agree with Rabbi Yehuda.
That maybe in context.
In context,
like,
that, you know.
But the Bryce, it does not sound like that. Rabbi Yehuda, the Bryce, the Mashiach, the Spirulay, the Mishra Tina, Nami Bai Ho Kofa. Rabbi Yehuda and the Maisa says that everything needs context. If it's not in context, you would ask for both wearing and carrying everything, and you need a proof otherwise. So again, what is that? Mistarad Masvis and Kaimalan sounds like the Ran says, Chris, we should go like our Mishnah, the Stam Levisha Mashma. That if you use Tzemer without any context, that means wearing it, and you would be allowed to carry it. He says, although the Rambam disagrees with that conclusion, he says he believes that that's the way we should read Rabbi Yehuda in the conclusion. That if you just say Tzemer, it means Levisha and not carrying it. That's normal. But when people talk about wool, they're not carrying about carrying around wool, they're talking about wearing wool. But if there's a context which defines otherwise, then we say that then he's defined by the context, not simply by wearing wool. Right.